Let's jump right in. I want to start today's topic by looking at a very interesting historical document. Everybody has a source sheet? Who wants a source sheet? Okay. So if you look at the first page of the source sheet, you'll see a picture. This is what we call a Pinkas Beit Knesset. It's a synagogue ledger book. It's from a Slovakian synagogue made in the year 1805. And it was really, there's a family, maybe it's even one person, in Switzerland that maintains a library of Judaica. It's called the Briginsky Collection. That's their last name. And this manuscript is in the custody of the Briginsky Collection, and that's where I found it, on their website. And this is a synagogue ledger book. But there's something very interesting about this synagogue ledger book. It is not what most of our synagogue ledger books today look like in a lot of ways. There's a lot of artistic flourishing. There are trees. It's very pretty looking. And if you look at what it says on the top right, it says Tzurat Binyan Beit HaKnesset Beit Hei Kaf Nun Samech. The structure of the synagogue. This is a blueprint. This is the structure, what the blueprint of the synagogue in Slovakia. I'm not going to try and pronounce that name, in Liptovský Mikuláš, Slovakia. It has the women's section and it has the men's section. And it says something very interesting. If you look at the right-hand side, listed sideways, it says, "Leman yedu kol ish v'ish asher yavo al hakodesh," so that everybody knows, "Lo yikare shemo amekomo hanirsham." Everybody's going to know where to sit. And in fact, if you look very closely at this diagram, you'll notice that there are tiny gray lines. If you look at the gray arrow on the top left of the image, I made an arrow pointing to them. You can see there are tiny gray lines going all around. Do you see those? Those synagogues. You need good eyesight to see it. Those are names. Those are names. This was a synagogue ledger book detailing where everybody was supposed to sit. And those are the names of the people who had those seats. And there's the men's section and there's the women's section, but they all have names. Everybody has a place to sit. This is fascinating. Already from the 1800s, and probably much earlier than that, people cared about their seats. People cared about where they got to sit, so much so that the designers of the synagogue actually created a synagogue map to tell people where to sit. We do that specifically on the high holidays, but this was every single Shabbos. If you were in that shul, you had a place to sit, and you knew where your place was going to be. And so today, that's just the way of introducing the following topic, which is the synagogue seat in halacha. Should someone specify a seat to daven in? Why should someone do this? What if someone is sitting in your seat? What should you do halachically? How do you handle that? So I titled the shiur, "You're Sitting in My Seat," the history and halachot of makom kavua. But I think what we're actually going to do is we're going to divide this topic into two shiurim. This time today, we'll talk about the halachic aspects of makom kavua, the idea, the imperative, as we shall soon see, to develop a fixed place for prayer. And then next week, even though we've started it by looking at this diagram, we'll talk about the history of makom kavua, because the truth is that over the centuries, there have been many an interesting historical anecdote and encounter where these laws became relevant, and we'll explore some of that next week. Today we'll talk about the halachic aspects, and that will provide us, A, with some practical knowledge for our own lives and some Talmud Torah, and also with the background to explore the historical cases that we'll look at next time. So let's jump right in. If you turn to the second page, the most important source regarding the idea of setting a fixed place for prayer is the Gemara in Masechet Brachot. The Gemara Masechet Brachot and Daf Vav Amud Bet says, I apologize that I didn't number the sources, I forgot, and I apologize that I also forgot to make the English text larger in most of the cases, because I know it can be a little bit difficult to read. But this is what the Gemara says. Amar Rabbi Chelbo. Rabbi Chelbo said, Amar Rav Huna. In the name of Rav Huna, Kol HaKoveya Makom Letfilato, anybody who sets a fixed place for prayer, Elokei Avraham Ve'ezro, the God of Avraham, meaning God, assists such an individual. Uchshemet, and when that fair fellow who sets aside a fixed place for prayer passes away, Omrim lo, people say about him, I anav I chasid mitamidav shel Avraham Avinu. Where is the humble one? Where is the pious one of the disciples of our father Avraham? So Rabbi Chabo says, if you set aside a fixed place for prayer, well, two things happen. Number one, God's going to help you. It doesn't say with what. God's going to help you. And number two, people will eulogize you in a laudatory way. People will respect you. People will talk about you as a humble person. People will talk about you as a righteous person. And that's source number one. The Gemara continues, V'Avraham Avinu. When it comes to Avraham Avinu, Min lanan dikva makom. From where do we know that Avraham Avinu established a fixed place for his own prayer? Meaning, this is something that Avraham did himself, our forefather Abraham. Dichtiv, because the Torah tells us, Vayashkem Avraham baboker el hamakom asher amad sham. The answer, the Gemara says, is in the Pasuk. The Pasuk in Bereishis says that Avraham arose in the morning to the place where he had stood before God. We're talking here about after Avraham saved Lot from the destruction of Sodom. Avraham got up to the place, Asher Amad Sham, the place where he had previously davened to Hashem to save Sodom. So Avraham davens to Hashem to save Sodom, and then he goes and he saves Lot, and then he goes back to the place where he davened. Well, how do we know that this is a demonstration of the idea that somebody should set a fixed place for prayer? How do we know that Avraham set a fixed place for prayer? Well, the Gemara continues, V'ein amida el tefila. When the Pasuk says, Asher amad sham, that Avraham stood there, amida, amad, standing, means tefila. Shene'emar ve'amod Pinchas ve'yifalel. The Pasuk says in Tehillim that Pinchas stood up and prayed. So we see that Amida, and in fact that's often colloquially what we call the Shemona Esrei, the Amida, the standing prayer. Amida refers here to prayer. So when it says that Avraham stood, it means that Avraham prayed. But note that this is the second time that Avraham prayed there. So we see that Avraham not only prayed in one location, one time, but he also went back to that location to pray a second time. And so the Gemara derives from this that Avraham himself actually did this. Avraham set a fixed place for his own prayers. That's the Gemara in Daf Vav. The Gemara in Daf Zayin continues this in the second source. V'am Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Daf Zayin Amud Beis. Kol hakoveya makom letfilato oivav noflim tachtav. Anybody who sets aside a fixed place for prayer, their enemies will fall beneath them. So if you're dealing with bullies, some people are being not so nice to you. So the Gemara says, anybody who sets a fixed place for prayer, your enemies will fall beneath you. It's a meritorious act that can earn you great deeds performed on your behalf. And the Gemara proves this from a pasuk. But we see from this that it's a good thing to establish a fixed place for prayer. It's pretty unambiguous that this is what the Gemara is. Shalom. It's pretty unambiguous that this is what the Gemara is teaching. And in fact, not only is this beneficial, but you can reap apparently great rewards. You can, your enemies will fall. People will say good things about you when you pass away. God is going to help you. And the truth is that this is a halacha. This is not just a laudatory gemara. The Shulchan Aruch paskins. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim Tzimin Tzad, you see if you attend, the third source up from the bottom of page two, Yikav. You should establish a fixed place for one's prayer, and you shouldn't change it unless there is a need, meaning something happens that you would need to change the place for prayer. So this is a halacha. So we see from here that there's an idea to set aside a fixed place for prayer. It's good for you. It's bad for your enemies, but it's good for you. Avraham Avinu did this, and the Shulchan Aruch, the codification of the great codifier of Jewish law, Paskins. It's a thing someone should do. Should set aside a place for prayer. Yeah.
Can you tell me the root of Kavua? What's the meaning of the word Kavua exactly?
The meaning of the word kavua that emerges from all of this is that, okay, granted that it's very beneficial, but why? Why is it important to establish a fixed place for prayer? Is it arbitrary? Does it help your tefillah in some capacity? Why does the Gemara go to such great lengths to praise? And why does the Gemara actually even talk about it in the first place, that this is something we should do? So the truth is that in the Sefer Hegione HaParsha, Rabbi Ari Wasserman, he goes through the Sfarim and he puts together a list of no fewer than 12 reasons for this halacha. We'll talk about three. This is on his safe part in his piece on Parshat Vayera. He talks about this. We'll talk about three. The Shulchan Aruch, actually, not here, but in Siman Sadi Chet, Seif David, has his own reason. Writes, HaTfilah hi b'makom HaKorban, the second to last source on page 2. That tefillah, this is a source that we've looked at before, and I believe on Chol HaMoed Pesach. Tefillah is in the place of the korbano, right? Tefillah took the place of the sacrifices. It's an idea that we've spoken about before. Ulechein tzarech lizahir shetehei dugmata korban. So, and because tefillah represents the korbanot, because tefillah is the placeholder for the korbanot, so one should take care to ensure that tefillah reflects the korbanot and mimics the korbanot in certain ways. So what are those ways? So one of those things, the Shulchan Aruch said, is ukviyut makom kimoha korbanot. Just as the korbanot shekol echad kavua mikom l'shchitatanu matan damav, just as with the korbanot, every korban had a specific place in the temple where it had to be slaughtered and where its blood had to be sprinkled, so too, when somebody davens, the tefillah takes the place of the korbanot, you should make sure that your tefillah happens in a specific place. It's a way to reenact in some ways and to memorialize the korbanot. That's the Shulchan Aruch's understanding of why. In short, because tefillah mimic the korbanot, they're established to take the place of the korbanot in some ways, so therefore, we should see to it that our tefillah resemble the korbanot as much as possible. Is that clear? Okay, great. So that's the idea of the Shulchan Aruch. But the truth is, there are other ideas. The Meiri, Rabbi Menachem Meiri, one of the great Rishonim, writes in his commentary. He writes something very different. The last source on page 2, he quotes this halacha: Ro'ei la'adam ikvo amakom letfilato. It's proper for a person to set aside a fixed place to daven. Shechol shehamakom meyuchal lo letfila, because when you have a fixed place to daven, then what happens? Kavanato mitsuya biyoter. Then you're going to have more kavana. You're going to have more concentration. You're going to be able to focus better when you're davening. The Meiri doesn't say how this actually works. What is it about having a fixed place for prayer that actually enables somebody to focus better on their davening? But the Shita Mikubetzet Hachadash, Rabbi Yonatan Steif, quotes from the Drashot of Ra'anach, we'll read it in a second. Before we do that, Rabbi Yonatan Steif is a figure worth knowing about. He was a senior dayan in Budapest, Hungary, before World War II. He survived World War II on a train to Switzerland and made it to Brooklyn, where he passed away in, I believe, the 50s. And he was a big halachist and a very important halachic authority. He quotes from the Ra'anach. The Ra'anach is Rabbi Eliyahu ben Chaim. Rabbi Eliyahu ben Chaim was, I believe, a 16th century Turkish rabbi. And I usually don't like to quote quotes of quotes. If he quotes from Rabbi Eliyahu ben Chaim from a Sefer of Drashot, and he has a Sefer of Drashot, we should put that Sefer of Drashot in. But the truth is two things. First of all, I wasn't able to find it within a brief time of looking for it. And also, the Sefer, the published editions of the Sefer, are very old, and they're very hard to read. So even if we were to find it and put it on the source sheet, it would be very difficult to decipher. It's written in a little bit of an unintuitive script that we're not used to. But in any case, it's quoted and preserved in the Sefer of Yonatan Steif, the Shita Mikubetzes HaChadash, not the original Shita Mikubetzes of Rabbi Bezalel Ashkenazi. And he writes, Tzarich ledad ma'yitenu ma'yosif. What do you get? What is added by establishing a fixed place for prayer? And not only that, but he kind of says, it's a little bit of an awkward point, but it's a good point. He says, va'adaraba, on the contrary, you would think, haya nira hefecha inyan. You would think the opposite. that you should never have a fixed place to daven. Why? Because God is everywhere. And the idea that one should fix a place for prayer seems to contravene the idea that you can experience God wherever you are in the world, wherever you are in the shul, wherever you are in this room. And he says, also, it doesn't seem like a great display of humility to insist on davening in a specific place. It really should be more God-focused than that. So he says, it's a little hard to explain this halacha. Why is it? Why is it that... And his kasha is a good kasha, right? It's a good kasha. His kasha is... Doesn't that contravene the idea that God is everywhere? If setting a fixed place for tefillah is essentially saying, this is where I'm going to encounter God. So it seems to fly in the face of the idea that, yes, you could have fixed your makom anywhere you wanted to, and in theory that works, but to say, to limit where you're going to experience God seems to contravene, to contradict the notion that God is everywhere and can be found everywhere. So he quotes from the Ra'anach, Rabbi Eliyahu ben Chaim, that he says, the reason for this is because when you change your makom, it causes you to get distracted. Because what happens when you move places? You have a different view. And then you're going to say, oh, I never noticed that plaque on the wall. I wonder who Dr. Lescott was. I wonder what he looked like. I wonder who was in his family. Oh, I didn't notice that that light was on for the art site, but the light on the left side is off. I wonder, should I tell somebody about that? I don't know. What should I do? Oh, look, I didn't realize there was a window on this side of the shul. I'm going to... So he says, when you daven in one place, at the beginning, yes, you'll have some kind of distractions, but it'll normalize. And then you'll be able to daven there. But if you're constantly choosing a new place to daven, you're more likely to get distracted. And so it's a practical function of making sure that you can focus while davening. That's what he says. So those are some of the reasons for the many reasons, Rabbi Rosserman quotes 12, but some of the many reasons for this halacha to choose a place, a specific place to daven. There is another important question that still needs answering, which is, what is the extent of the obligation here? Is it a chiyuv? Is it something that you have to do? You have to establish a fixed place for prayer? Is it maybe a mitzvah? Maybe it's a fulfillment of a mitzvah, but it's not an obligation? Is it just a good idea? The Gemara, if you look at the Gemara didn't say any of this. The Gemara really only said that you get rewarded if you do it, but it didn't say you have to do it. And it might, from the Gemara, seem like just a piece of good advice. If you want your enemies to fall, if you want people to say good things about you after you've passed, then take on this practice. But the Gemara doesn't say what the extent of the obligation is. So this is a very important teshuva of the Rivash, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Sheshes. The Rivash writes that we have a lot of these statements in the Gemara. The Gemara in Brachos especially talks about various things, and talks about these praiseworthy things that will happen to you if you undertake them. So, for example, he quotes our Gemara, Kol Gavei Makom LeTefilato. Excuse me. Anybody who establishes a fixed place for prayer is going to have all these good things happen to them. And he says, Shaharei Lashon Chachamim Kachu. It's in Tavkuf Yud Gimel of the Rivash, the third source from the bottom on page 3. This is the language of the sages. This is how they talk. Kishemedabrim bischar haMitzvot. When they talk about the reward for mitzvot, they say, Omer kol haOse mitzvah plonis. Anybody who does such and such a mitzvah, yes charo kach. The reward will be such and such. Afal pish hadavar huchovalav. But really, that is not that. They're just talking about the rewards. But really, hadavar huchova. It's even though, yes, you will get rewarded if you do it, and maybe you won't get rewarded if you don't do it, but that doesn't mean it's a choice. It's still a chova. It's still an obligation. And he says, kimo kol hakoveya makom letfilato, just as this halacha. And he quotes a number of examples, but this is one of them, who establishes a fixed place for prayer. So what emerges from this is that according to the Rivash, indeed, one is not only impelled or inspired to take on this practice of establishing a fixed place for prayer, it's a concrete obligation. That seems to be what the Rivash would say. Rabbi Wasserman in his Sefer also points to a teshuva response of the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, a very important posek and medical Jewish medical ethicist who passed away in 2006. Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg is dealing with the question, can you purchase the funds for a makom kavua? Can you purchase a set, sometimes you have to buy a set seat for yourself. Can you purchase the funds for a set seat using your charity money, using your miser? Can you purchase the funds for your set seat using your charity money? So charity money, we know, doesn't, you can, in generally, often you can use charity money for mitzvahs. It doesn't, miser ksafim does not necessarily always exclusively have to be given to people who are poor. There are other mitzvahs you can use it for. So the Tzitz Eliezer says, this is Rabbi Wasserman is medayik in this, he reads it precisely. He says, ika mitzvah. It is a mitzvah to have a set place for yourself in the shul. And so therefore, he says, you can use your miser money for it. He has some conditions. He says, if you want to use your miser money for it, you can't get upset if people sit in your seat, because it's not very nice, and it's not very charitable. But it is what emerges from what he's talking about is that he says, ika mitzvah. It still is a mitzvah. And so therefore, you can use your charity money for it. And he has some other conditions also, if this is practical. We should talk afterwards. But maybe you can say, based on this truth of the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Wasserman claims this, that maybe this is a contrast to the Rivash. The Rivash says, no, it's an absolute chiyuv gamor, it's a concrete obligation. Maybe the Tzitz Eliezer says, no, it's only a mitzvah. And not only that, but Rabbi Ben Zion Uziel, in one of his truvos, the former Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, until his passing in 1953, writes, ra'oi. And that was also the language the Me'iri used. Also, if you look back at the Me'iri says ra'oi. Not that it's an obligation, not that it's a mitzvah, but it is proper. It's a good and a proper thing to do. Okay, so there's a little bit of a question as to whether these poskim were paskening when they wrote their tshuva that it's a mitzvah and not a chiyuv. It's a ra'oy and not a chiyuv. It's not a mitzvah. But at the very minimum, everybody agrees that it's a good thing to do. With the Rivash really occupying what would be the most extreme end of the spectrum, that it is an absolute obligation. So we've looked at the background text, and we've looked at the reasons for this imperative and the extent of the obligation. But another question is, where does it apply? Where does it apply? Let's say you're on an airplane. I don't know where I was going with that. I don't know. But let's just look at some of these. Some of the Rishonim. So the Rabbeinu Yonah writes that. He actually writes in the top of page number 4, Kol hakoveya makom letfilato, anybody who establishes a fixed place for prayer, Elokei Avraham yeh be'ozro, Ezro, God is going to help them. Where did we see that? What source was that? Anybody remember? It was the Gemara. He's quoting the Gemara. He's quoting the Gemara Brachos. And then Rabbeinu Yonah adds something that's not in the Gemara. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Lo amar zeben mekomot shabbeit ha-knesset. This does not apply in the synagogue. The kevan shekula makom tefilahi ein lahakpid shan, because the entire Beit Knesset, the entire synagogue, is considered to be one large makom tefila. So there's no mitzvah to further differentiate a place for yourself in the shul. Once you're davening in shul, that's a makom kavua l'tefila. But where does this apply? He says. When somebody is davening at home, it's not always possible or feasible to go to shul. And in those situations where somebody is davening at home, is davening in their house, then they should establish a set place in the house in order to daven there. The Shevet HaLevi, Rabbi Wozner, actually takes this one step further. He writes, not just for tefillah, but also for learning Torah. You should have a corner or a desk or something where you keep some svarim, and that's going to be your like makom of avodat Hashem, which is interesting. But the Rabbeinu Yonah is really talking about here, is talking about tefillah. And he says that actually this doesn't apply in shul at all. So this Pinkus, this synagogue ledger book, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, it's unnecessary, right? Because now all these people, oh, I'm sitting here, he's sitting here, he's sitting here. Don't need it. We don't need it. It's only at home, Rabbeinu Yonah says. So how do we get from point A to point B? Because it's very important to the synagogue, apparently. So there is a Rush, and he's not the only one, I believe. The Rush writes, no, lo bai lemei marshiyehe ragil lehit pailo bebeit hanakneset achat. He says, first of all, this is not to say that you have to only daven in one synagogue, and you're not allowed to leave and daven in another synagogue. But he quotes the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi, Abri b'tanachum Rabbi Chiya tzarich adam liyached lo makom, not at home, Beveit HaKnesset, in the shul. The Rush says, for according to the Talmud Yerushalmi, the mitzvah is specifically, or the chiyuv, whatever it is specifically to establish a makom tefillah, not at home, but in the synagogue. In the synagogue. So we have a machlokas rishonim, right? On the one hand, there's Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says it's a mitzvah to do it at home. It's actually not a mitzvah to do it at shul. And the Rush writes, no, the mitzvah is at shul. Mitzvah is at shul. So how do we paskin? So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Sadi Sif Yotet, Yigvam Alkom Letzvilato Shelo Yishnuim Lo Letzorech. We saw this already. You should establish a fixed place for prayer and not change it without a need. The Ein Dai B'Mashi Yikvalo Beit HaKnesset Lihit Palel. Like the Rush. It's not enough that you only set aside a synagogue to daven in. Elagam B'Beit HaKnesset Shekavua Ba. Tzarich shehiya lo makom kavura. Even in the synagogue you daven. Right, the Rabbeinu Yonah said, it's enough to just go to synagogue. That is the makom kavura. He says, no, it's not enough. Gam beveit haknesset, even within the synagogue, tzarich shehiya lo makom kavura. One has to establish for themselves a specific place to daven in the shul. You should take a chair, you should take a shtender, or whatever it is, but something that you will designate as your own place to daven. The Magen Avraham, by the way, on the Shulchan Aruch is Choshesh, is suspect for the Shita of Rabbeinu Yonah, and this meaning he thinks that even when you're at home, you should also make sure you have a set place to daven. But the Shulchan Aruch does paskin like the Rush, that this really applies most importantly in shul, and somebody should make sure to daven in a specific seat. And that's a halacha. That's a halacha. According to the Rivasha, it would be a chiyuv gamor, and people should establish a set place for prayer. And this is true as a matter of halacha lemaisa. That is what somebody should do. Someone should fix people who do that great and people who don't. It's ideal when you go to shul to try to make sure that you have your seat, that is your fixed place for prayer. Okay, any questions before we go on? Okay. There is a discussion about whether this halacha applies specifically to men who are obligated to daven, or more obligated to daven with a minyan, or also to women. The Alkut Yosef and the Otzar Dinim Leisha Olivat write that women should also establish a fixed place for prayer. In fact, the Chemda Daniel writes, from the word in the Gemara, Kol HaKoveya, anyone should establish a fixed place for prayer. It means kol, it means everybody. It means both men and women. And so this is a halacha that applies to both men and women. That's certainly the pshat. And so we see that there is this imperative to set up your own seat. And again, as a matter of practical halacha, we should do that. We should do that. If you haven't set up a place for yourself to sit in shul, you should try to do that. I think it's important. It's certainly what the Gemara wanted. And that's a real mitzvah, a real idea. Okay. A question arises, though, which is that if you set up a seat for yourself, some shuls have plaques, admittedly, saying that this is your seat. But most shuls don't, and even if you do have a plaque, it's not guaranteed that someone's going to avoid sitting there. So the question does come up, which is, someone sitting in my seat. Someone sitting in my seat. What should I do? So I'm sure everybody here is smart. What you should definitely not do is just be obnoxious about it, and that should be clear. But there, let's talk about that for a minute. So there's a Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham writes that Venira Li, on the second from the top on page number 4, Venira Li, the Toch Dalit Amot, Chashiv Makom Achat, Yef Charlotte Samtim. That as long as you're within 4 Amot, that is still considered to be within the Makom Kavua that you've established for yourself. What is 4 Amot? As long as you're within the first 4 Amot of your, so let's say you choose a seat, I want that seat. Then as long as you're within 4 Amot, meaning even if someone's sitting in your seat, but you can sit next to them and you'll still be within four amot. So that you're still considered to be davening in your makom kavua. Now, it's worth here differentiating, psychologically speaking, is that there are usually two issues here when someone sits in your seat. There's the specific strict halachic issue, which is ameliorated by the fact that you could just move down a seat and not be in that seat anymore, and still be considered, according to the Magen Avraham, Mishnah Berurah quotes this Magen Avraham, to be sitting in your makom. But then there's also the ego part, which is, oh, but they're sitting in my seat. That's, I don't want to move down a row. That's my seat. So the truth is that it's probably not such a good hung-hugga, not such a good frame of reference. Move down a row for one davening. It's not a big deal. The Shulchan Aruch also says, remember, for a tzorech, it's even mutter to change your seat. Then you would be led. So what other tzorech is there than not embarrassing somebody by telling them that they're sitting in your seat, making them feel unwelcome? So for all of these reasons, it's advisable not to make a big deal if somebody is sitting in your seat. Certainly, if someone is a guest, then it's only, meaning if somebody is living in your community and they daven there for multiple tefillos, then it might be appropriate, and we'll see tshuvas to talk about this, to say, hey, by the way, this has been my seat for a while, I really like it, is there any way we can figure something out, versus a guest, where it's really only a one-off. They're coming in for Mincha Maariv, they're coming in for one Shabbos. That's, I think, is the right thing to do, is to let that go. The poskim say this. In fact, there's the tshuva of Rav Avigdor Nevinzal, a contemporary figure, the former chief rabbi of the old city of Jerusalem, and he's still alive, Baruch Hashem. And someone asked him, in the last source on page 4, the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch says, Yikva makom tefilato, that you should set aside a place for prayer. V'hamishnah Berurah hosif, and the Mishnah Berurah adds, based on the Magen Avraham, we just saw that Magen Avraham, toch arba amot chashuv makom echad, that within four amot is still considered to be the original place. So then he asked the question, what do you do? Misha ba lebeit haknesset lihitpalo bimkomo hakavua, ach hitbarer she'achar she'acher yoshev bimkomo. You get to shul and you find out that someone's sitting in my seat. Right? It's like Goldilocks and the three bears. Yeah. Someone's sitting in my seat. Could go on a reach, such as a guest. And not only is someone sitting in your seat, but chol arba ahamot shemesav it's fusim, that all of the arba amot around it, even the four amot around it, are all taken. So you can't just say, I'll move down a row. You're not going to get to daven in your makom. Ha'im tzarich, in that case, is it necessary, l'ha'ir li'yoshev b'makomo, to ask somebody who's sitting in your seat, she'yavor l'makom acher, to go and sit in another seat, k'dei she'yuchal hitpalo b'makomo ha'kavua, so that the first person can have his or her makom kavua back. Rav Nevinzal says, one answer, lo, no. It's not necessary. Lama? Why? Ein al ha'aliv ben adam. Rav Nevinzal says, because it's not proper to cause offense or to insult or to embarrass anyone. And the person, by you telling them that they're in your seat, is liable to feel all of those things. And so he says, even if you're not going to be able to sit even within your four amot, you still should not tell someone. You still should not tell someone. Rabbi Ari Wasserman, who we spoke about at the beginning, he used to live, I think he lives in Israel now, but he used to live in LA. And he writes on the last page, in page number 5, Uve'inyan ze danti im yedidi hagaon Rabbi Gershon Bess. I discussed this as Rabbi Gershon Bess. Rabbi Gershon Bess is a posek in Los Angeles. And is it proper to ask somebody to get out of your seat and go and daven in a different place? And these are the guidelines that Rabbi Bess gave. He says, it depends on whether this person who's in your seat regularly davens at this shul. Why should that be different? Why should it be different if someone regularly davens at your shul? So he says that if someone regularly davens in your shul, then this is going to become a recurring problem. And then it's really proper to inform the fellow that they're sitting in your seat. But imhu oreach, if the person's just a guest and is just stopping by, it's not going to be a constant problem, a persistent issue. Then you should let them daven, even if they're in your seat. And then he says, even if a guest sits in your seat multiple times, Efshar limtso techila makom acher. What you can do, maybe, is find that person, instead of just kicking them out of your seat, why don't you also find them a place for them to go? First, set up another place for them to go, and then you can go and say, hey, that's my seat. Would you mind? I actually found a place for you to sit. I think you might like it. Can we switch? That would be appropriate. And then he says something I think is very wise. He says, you should get a third person. You shouldn't tell them, you're sitting in my seat. I think it sounds a little obnoxious. It has the potential to, at least. But if you get someone, you can say to someone else, it's important that I daven there, would you mind saying you're sitting? And also, if you're the person who's sitting in someone else's seat, for someone to come up and say to you, you're sitting in my seat, that's sad. Like, you're not, it's hard to feel good about a person after an interaction like that. But if you have a third party, say, if I have someone else come up to the fellow who's sitting in my seat and says, hey, by the way, just so you know, I know you're new here, but that seat belongs to a certain person in our shul, and do you mind just, it's different. It's different. It takes away the personal sting of it if you get another person to do it. And I think that that's very wise, and I would recommend doing that if this is something that needs to be done. So what would Rabbi Bess say? Rabbi Bess would probably say, well, if it's a guest, better not to say anything. If this is going to become a recurring issue, then, yes, it would be appropriate to tell them, but ideally, what you should do is, first of all, you should make sure that they have another place to go, because otherwise, poor soul, the next seat they're going to take is going to be someone else's seat. It's not so easy to feel welcome and comfortable after someone's told you that they're sitting in your seat, because then it seems like a minefield. You never know what's going to be someone else's seat. And so it makes sense to set aside a seat that you know they can sit in. You live in the community, so presumably you know what seats would be okay. And you should try to have someone else do it. Yeah.
I don't know the historic trail. I think the notion of an usher comes from Christianity.
Practical guidance. So if somebody is sitting in your seat, first of all, the most practical guidance is that everybody should do this. Everybody should make it a set place for prayer. That's an imperative in the Gemara. But if someone is sitting in your seat and is poised to make that his or her regular makom tefillah, then it's okay to say something. But it's important to do it in a way, chas v'shalom, that you don't embarrass them or make them feel unwelcome. And if it's just a one-off thing with a guest, then better to let it go. And just to summarize what we studied today, so there is an imperative to set aside a fixed place for prayer. Authorities do disagree regarding whether this is an absolute chiyuv, an absolute obligation, or maybe just a mitzvah, or something even less than that, that's just proper. But everybody agrees that it's proper at a minimum, at least proper. Authorities also debate the reason for this. We saw some say it helps your kavana, some say that it's to mimic the sacrifices that were offered in temple times. It applies both in shul, certainly in shul. Magen Avraham says we should, like the Rabbeinu Yonah, that you should also do this at home. And again, if someone is in one seat, the best advice is usually to let it go more often than not. So next time we meet, which is Bezrat Hashem 2 weeks from today, we'll discuss some of the historical elements. We'll pick up from this Pinchas Beis HaKnesses, which is, I think, very interesting, because this halacha actually does have a rich and a fascinating history. As you might imagine, this is the kind of thing that people want to get upset about, and it has resulted in some very strange and unfortunately bitter disputes over the course of Jewish history, and we'll talk about those. This year is just the beginning.